Greetings, I am Jim.
And I am Sean, and we welcome you to our podcast.
Our goal is to entertain you with our discussions about RPG, fantasy, and everything in between.
Come sit by the fire. You're safe here. We'll keep watch. We hope you enjoy 13-Sided Die. Level 3, Episode 27, The Return of the Delayed Duo. Yes, it is us. We are back. Come hear us talk about what's been going on lately. Chat about the upcoming ArdCon.
Woohoo!
And then we try to answer our last guest, Friendly Mike's, question about D&D modules. Listen to us ramble on with no real agenda. Did we just remake Episode 0? All this and more in our latest episode of 13-Sided Die.
Well, hello out there. Do you remember us? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. I don't know. I hardly remember myself half the time. It's Sean here with my good buddy.
Epic Jim, right.
That's what
they used to call me.
That's it. That's you. Perfect. Yes, I know we don't apologize, but today we are going to apologize. It's been like 3 months since our last podcast. Life has gotten in the way, as always, and we've got a lot of things going on, but we are here today, and Jim and I have kind of squeezed out some time to sit and chat.
Yeah, stuff's been happening in a good way, though.
Like, all good.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, all good. You know, and then that's the thing. Like, lots of things happening, and then something like this, which we've said many times, for me, this is just a fun thing to do, and it's hard sometimes to find time for the fun things, but it's all good.
I'm trying to turn this into a job, but you won't pay me, Sean, so I don't know.
We need more sponsors, man.
Yeah.
We're just talking about that. But yeah, we're here today, and we're very excited to chat with you guys. There is lots of things going on. I've just taken a massive, massive project to the mail today. This box was so big, I could hardly carry the damn thing. It's about the biggest thing I think I've shipped through the post office, and it's headed to my client in Florida. It's a big kind of Asian temple kind of build on a big grass hill, and it's 430 for his 30 millimeter minis to play on his game table, which is amazing. And that's been a big push to get that done, so very excited to get that out and gone. But yeah, I just feel like there's just been a lot of things happening, and of course in I think it's 10 days from now, a big thing's happening, right?
Woo, ArtCon, baby.
Very exciting. Yeah, if you're in the Calgary, kind of southern Alberta-ish area, please come check it out. That is on Saturday, June 8th, here in the Renfrew Community Association. And very exciting. Last year was a blast, and I think we're really excited about this year.
Oh, you got no excuses. Chris, Old Crow, I mean, he's flying across Canada. If you're,
that's crazy.
If you're within a plane shot, you should be trying to make it to this con.
I've talked to so many people that have said they wish they could make it, and I get that. I mean, if you're in other countries and stuff, that's hard. That's super hard. But yeah, if you're in and around here, please come check it out. It's, you know, $10 at the door, and then you have like so many things going on. Once you're in, everything else is free. And we posted our TTRPG games online to sign up for in our workshops. And as it stands right now, we have six one-shots running through the day, and three of them are sold out. And our good friend Courtney, who's been on the show before, is doing a painting workshop, and that's sold out. She's amazing. She's just a rock star. I'm doing a basic terrain building workshop, and I think I've got maybe two seats left in that. Yeah, it's really coming together. So if you, like I said, if you're around and you're interested, we have amazing speakers coming this year. Such great speakers.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and the mini painting competition, of course.
I don't know. Are we going to have that again? I think that's that thing's kind of lame.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Flop last year.
Yeah, that flopped hard. Yeah, that's huge. And our good friends at Fenris, wow, big supporters. They sent us this huge box of goodies to help support that. And Jim, just you nail that, man. Like, that is such a fun event. I know that was one of the big highlights last year. And we moved it a bit, so it's kind of a bit more around kind of the midday, which is better. And I think it's going to be just it's going to be awesome. There's going to be so many people excited about that. So,
oh, thanks, man. Yeah, and then Dustin from Kings Valley Forge made us the Artie minis for that. So our little wizard mascot gets to be the mini.
It's amazing. And yeah, Dustin, he's helped me out so many times with projects, and I know he's helped you out on stuff, and he's such a gentleman, such a great artist too. He does such great work. So super happy about that. And yeah, that should be amazing. There's a lot of really good things. And at the end, towards the end of the day, we're going to do our podcast with anybody who's available. Any of the people who gave talks or workshops or whatever are going to be up on a stage. We're going to kind of do like a Gen Con panel with a bunch of people. And our good buddy, Old Crow Chris, who Jim mentioned, is flying in from out east, who's running a game on his pirate adventure, which is exciting, is going to be our moderator. And Chris is kind of, we've talked about it before, Chris is kind of our lore master for he knows our silly podcast better than we do. I never remember what we say, and he tells us what we've said. So it's going to be exciting. I think Jim and I aren't going to talk very much. It's going to be more asking questions and getting the panel to talk, which will be really fun. But we'll kind of throw in a few things here or there. So, yeah, it's going to be a great time. Like I said, if you're in and around, we went from 6 hours last year to 9 hours this year. It's going to be a big haul. But yeah, it should be really fun. And I heard a little bird whisper that a friend of mine might have a table with some really cool stuff there that you could maybe buy some neat things.
Yeah, we'll see.
How's that going? It's looking good.
Yeah, real good. We set up yesterday, so me and my wife just been making some polymer clay stuff. And yeah. I got a couple art things, not very much, though. That didn't really pan out too good, but just with the prints and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But I got lots of cool stuff there. So, yeah, we're pretty excited. That's the first time in my life I'll ever sell something that I made. So it's...
That's awesome. I'm so happy.
Nerve-wracking. So, yeah. We got shirts made and stuff. Like, just... We went all out for it.
You're going to crush it. I'm so excited for you. It's so cool.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I hope so. So, yeah, if you guys are there, you know, check us out. We'll be the table beside the two giant flags.
Yes. Yes. Jim's table will also be the sign up for the painting competition. So you can do that at Jim's table, which is going to be off to the side of the stage, stage left when you're looking at it. I'll also have a table when you kind of first come in. My table's right near the front entrance, and I will have a bunch of things. I've been kind of frantically putting stuff together. So if you're looking for any dice trays or potions of healing or little tiny mini original D&D manuals I put together as fridge magnets are kind of cool. So lots of silly little things that I tried out this year. But we have 25 vendors in the building. It's going to be insane. A lot of amazing. A lot from last year came back. We also have some new people. And yeah, like I said, we had workshops, games, people giving talks. Yeah, wow, it's chock-a-block full of stuff. It'll be amazing.
Oh, that's cool. A future episode, I'd like to talk about our experiences at cons and what we did for ArtCon to make it real special, you know, and why it's been so successful. I thought that'd be cool.
That is a really good, really good topic. I know without talking about that topic, a lot of the shows that I have participated in as a vendor or a person giving talks, I kind of paid a lot of attention and I saw the things that didn't work. And that's kind of how I tried to base ArtCon around, look at those things that didn't work and what can we do to make them better. And I know last year it felt like we kind of hit the mark. People had a great time. We had way more people than we thought we'd have, way, way more. So hopefully this year we have a food truck coming this year, which I'm excited about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we weren't able to do that last year, but we have a food truck coming. And you hooked up a professional photographer for us.
Yeah, I don't know how I did that, but I did.
Amazing.
And I'm very stoked about it.
Yeah, I had just posted about that today about Andrew, Derek.
Derek.
His name's Derek, right, for Black Valley Photography. Amazing, amazing stuff. I just posted today about it on Instagram, and I was checking out his site, and oh, my word, like, just amazing photographs. The guy's really talented.
I wanted to set up a photo booth, but we didn't have enough room.
No, I think he's he's too good for us, I think, in all honesty. Like, his stuff is sick. Crazy.
Yeah. But
we could do an impromptu if it's a sunny day. We have the whole patio.
Yeah,
so we could do a photo booth out on the patio, but I don't know,
we'll see. Day of
yeah. No, it's super exciting. I mean, it's been a crazy year for it. I sent out emails to people and announced that the vendor tables were available to reserve, and in 3 days of doing that, this was back in early March, they were sold out within 3 days. Like, that's crazy. Absolutely crazy. So, yeah, we had some big sponsors this year. MCDM, Matt Colville's team, they sponsored us, which is amazing. Yeah, I mean, a lot of our local people, but to get those guys was pretty cool, I thought. And they're super generous. Like I mentioned, the Fenris guys, the Easy Roller Dice Company, that was one through you. They sent us a ton of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That's sick.
No, they're a good company. They've always like been good to me through Instagram and stuff. So they're one of OGs with me.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. And you know, and that's what it is. A lot of the elements of ArtCon is just connections, people you know, friends, people who want to help out and people who are interested. And we've had like such a great response from people behind the scenes with all the helping out and stuff. So anyways, we're kind of rambling a bit, but next podcast will be us at the show. That'll be out sometime in June, so stay tuned for that. And is there anything else kind of going on right now that we want to chat about before we kind of get to a little bit of our topic?
No, I hiked a mountain yesterday. Been mushroom picking, started morel picking this year. Been kind of obsessed with that.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of those pictures. That's cool.
So you know how short our Canadian springs and summers are. So I'm the opposite of Sean, where I'm literally outside until it probably snows again. So
it's true. You are very outdoorsy. I get out for a walk with poor little Mac, and that's about my outdoor activity. You've been really, really crushing it. Some of the photos look amazing.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's well, yeah. I live in the mountains, so
yeah.
Everywhere I can't go wrong. Any direction I head, it's nice. So.
That is true. I have a lot of concrete around me. It's not quite as nice, but there you go. Cool. Well, our last episode, we had our good friend Friendly Mike on, and we had an amazing chat. It was really, really good. Really, if you haven't listened to that, highly recommend it. Mike is just a super great guy. Again, going to be at ArtCon. Mike is doing a double duty. He's doing a one-shot, an OSR one-shot, and then he's also doing a workshop on storytelling in OSR and Theater of the Mind, which is cool. But Mike,
and he's signing posters too.
Yes, he is. Yes, I got the posters. Went to the print shop yesterday, and I should be getting them in a couple of days here. So that's exciting, and we'll get Mike to sign them if you want them.
Yeah, he did the official art for ArtCon.
Oh, crushed it! Right,
both like years so far. So
crazy.
Yeah,
crazy.
No, it's amazing.
As a graphic designer, I'm not kind of like a pencil to paper draw like amazing art like Mike does. I'm kind of the other side of things where a lot of times I put that stuff together in graphic layout. But having all that amazing artwork at your fingertips to work with is just such a treat. Oh my God, it's such a treat. It's crazy. It's so fun.
Yeah. Sorry, I had to give Mike that shout out there.
No, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Total credit due there. The guy is just amazing. Wayward Brother Tattoos, if you want to check out his work. Mike is just wildly talented, super great stuff. But we had a great chat with Mike, and at the end of the show, he kind of hit us with what he would like us to talk about on this episode. Do you kind of want to refresh everybody's memory, Jim?
What I wrote down here is that he said favorite module tropes and how they apply to one shots versus campaigns, like full campaigns.
Yeah.
And then like I knew what that meant, but for everyone that doesn't, I googled it. And that trope is a common or overused theme or device.
Yeah, perfect. I in all honesty, I've not used a lot of modules in my game playing. I've always been much more of a build your own world and kind of homebrew stuff. But saying that, you know, there's a few things I know I'd like to kind of chat a little bit about modules and nothing wrong with them. Like, and we talked about this in one of our early episodes too. Like I think modules are amazing, and I think they're really good if you are fairly new to the game, because it gives you an idea of how the mechanics from the other side of the screen work, right? So modules are great for that. We talked before about when people say, yeah, I'm just gonna run a module, it's gonna be faster. It's like, nope, I don't think that at all. I almost think modules take more time than homebrewing, because you've got so much reading to do. You have to fully understand the module. You can't just pick it up and play it without looking at it. But anyways, when we say modules, one of the things comes to my mind, and You know Barrett, the gentleman who owns the, you spent a fortune there last year, ArtCon, the Arcane Collectibles, something or other. He had a table at ArtCon. He had all the old modules and books.
Oh,
and all
right.
Yeah. He's coming back again. I'll warn you right now. So be careful with your wallet.
Hey, I'm bringing all my money. So it's...
There you go. I bumped into him at Tabletop YYC show last, I think it was in December or something, November, December. And I'm kind of flipping through his stuff, and I see the Temple of Elemental Evil sitting there. And my copy, I don't know whatever happened to it. Walked away. Somebody, it got legs and walked away. I don't know what happened. Or, you know, you lent it to somebody and never got it back. Yeah. But that was one of the very first things I played after high school, kind of playing a bit in high school. I got my high school buddy to go and put a game together, and he DM'd it, and we did that module. And I think we've talked about that before. And this, to me, you have to be careful about modules, because it's one of those ones where you play like from first level to seventh level. Like you go up to like, you know, seven levels in one module type of thing. Wow. And it's, anyone who's ever played that module, it's just bonkers. I'm going to talk about it actually at ArtCon in my talk, but it's like got so many levels. Every level has like an insane like map. Like it's just crazy huge map, and it takes so long to play that module. Our characters, you know, we went and like bought a house right near the entrance to the temple. And so it felt like very much we'd come to play D&D, and it was like you'd wake up in the morning, go outside, and it felt like you go ching ching, and you know, clock in on your time clock, go down to the dungeon, pick up where you left off, leave at the end of the day, ching ching, clock out, and go back to the house. And it just became this feeling of that's all you're doing. And for me, that's something I would, you know, really say about modules, just to be careful of, like if you've got a really long one, be careful, because I feel it takes over. Like it, you know what I mean? Like, so yeah. Anything for talking about modules, I think they're very, very good, and if you pepper them into your game, it's great. But I would try and pick ones that aren't super long. Long ones tend to be just, they go on and on and on, and it's kind of hard, you can't really bail on it either. Like you could maybe cut it short, but there's, you know, there's usually kind of that punchline at the end of the module you want to get your players to and stuff, so it's, you got to be very careful with that.
Yeah, like I know we talked about this a lot, but yeah, just cherry pick from them. That's what I do. Like
mm-hmm.
Get the idea, get some layouts of some things, and then you can just, you're going to have to make up most of it anyways on the spot, because your players are going to want to dig a hole in some graveyard or something, or they'll find something that's not in the book.
Completely. What is there one that comes to mind that you used a lot for stuff like that, Jim?
I used a lot. Just looking at my bookshelf here. I like
Waterdeep, like Dragon Heist and stuff,
okay.
Like just for the city kind of thing. Got lots of ideas from that one. One I did play that I really love, I'm blanking right now. It's a really famous one, White Plume Mountain.
Okay.
We played that one. We did a 13-hour one-shot, and I loved it. I loved how crazy it was. There's like a pharaoh, and there's like giant crabs, and like lots of puzzles, and it didn't make sense to me. Which
yeah.
I liked that. Like, I liked that every room felt like you had no idea what was behind the next door.
Yeah.
So I kind of took that when I planned dungeons too. I'm like, yeah, you can have weird stuff in the dungeon. Just like throw your place. Not every dungeon has to make sense, you know?
Totally.
I played Out of the Abyss, and that one, I got a lot of good ideas from that one for like Underdark. Like, I feel like, because I spent years in the Underdark as a player, so I kind of have a pretty good feeling about it. So I don't mind putting Underdark stuff in my game, because I know quite a bit about it because of that.
That makes sense. Can you, how do you feel about if you've already played a module? Could you go and could you play a module that you had DM'd if somebody else was doing it?
No.
No?
I don't think so. What do you think?
Yeah, it's something, I'll be honest, I'm a little bit, I do take a little pride in that. I've been in situations sometimes where I know exactly what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Because what the DM has chosen, like something I've heard about, or I've read, or I might have played or DM before, and I will play my character as my character doesn't know what's happening, and really not metagame. And I will sometimes, if anything, I lean the other way and do stupid things that I know are going to mess stuff up because I know what's coming. And I kind of actually get off on that stuff. I kind of think it's really fun when you do kind of know that and you can still not allow it to influence your decisions in a way that would benefit you. It's kind of neat. It doesn't happen that often, but it's kind of cool. I had picked up a module quite a while back. It's a Forgotten Realms module, and it's called The Secret of Spider Haunt. And it's tied into the Sword of the Dales. There's a trilogy. This goes back quite a ways. And it's for like a 2E version. But this was like, I think, the second of the three of them. And it revolves around Randall Morn, a big character in the Forgotten Realms world back then, in an area called Daggerdale. And I had homebrewed a lot of my Ardnor world. And I needed something... something to kind of for the characters to go and do. And I started looking around, and I didn't have a lot of time and felt a little creatively drained for coming up with a good idea. And I think for me, that's when modules are really helpful, when you're mm-hmm. not that you maybe don't have the time, but maybe you just don't have the energy and you're just not feeling the creativity. So I just kind of spun through a few things, and I found this one, and like, oh, I really like the elements of this. I really enjoyed what it was talking about, and had this evil kind of wizardy character in there. And I thought, oh, this is really cool. So I kind of worked this into my game, and it worked into my game so much. And this was like from a whole campaign ago, that one of the characters in our current campaign is directly from that module, which is hilarious. Like, one of the player characters right now is one of the NPCs from that module. It was really cool. They'd done a really good job, and it was quite epic. And I was able to use components of it and weave that into my story, which was really exciting. And I find that is a great way to use modules in that sense. Like, pick it up if you don't really have the time or the energy to do something in your own homebrew world, and use their components. Just make sure they dovetail into yours quite well. And like Jim says, cherry pick, take the best things from it and kind of go from there. And it worked really, really well. In that adventure campaign, we also wound up going to an area of my world called the Oaken, which is kind of like Egypt. It's a very kind of sand, pharaoh, mummy type world. And I was very excited about that, but again, was a little bit short on time and a little short on creativity for the beginning of it. So I went and found a very cool kind of module that was an Egyptian style module. And I used a ton of that and built around that for the start of that. And then the kind of the second and third parts of that mini part of the campaign I had written after that, my own stuff. But it was a great way to get into it and have stuff ready to go.
Yeah, like, and anything that you're maybe weak on, right? Maybe you're not good at making NPCs, you can just cherry pick those. Or if you're not terrible at maps, just cherry pick those. Like, you don't.
Oh, yeah.
You can pick and choose.
You don't have to use the whole thing, right? I think that's what you're saying. You can use pieces of it. And yeah, Jim's right. If you want to just get a bunch of cool NPCs, pick up modules, because they've got amazing NPCs with a lot of depth and a lot of information. And as we said before, don't be scared. Like, there, you can get almost all, if you hunt online, you can get almost all the original D&D modules in PDF format. I'm not advocating bootlegging and not paying for things. I'm not saying that. But if you look around, you can find these things, and it doesn't take that much time to convert old versions of the game modules to current day. It's not that hard. And even if you're just look at it, as Jim said, as an NPC, use their stats, use their names, use their information, and then kind of rebuild them into whatever version you're playing NPC. Great way to go. Maps is a great idea too, because that for a lot of people, that becomes a bit of a tough area if they're concerned artistically that they can't draw a map or whatever. Go and grab a map from somewhere else and just use it.
Yeah. And if you're a caveman like me with technology and PDFs isn't your thing, eBay, that's Sean can see eBay behind me. I got a whole shelf of the old modules that I found.
Yeah, and old bookstores, don't ever hesitate and ask an old bookstore, do you guys have any D&D stuff? And it's a little, you used to be able to just go, oh yeah, they'd kind of chuckle and laugh and point to a dusty box in the corner. Not so much now. Most stuff now is probably going to be in the front counter with a higher price on it, because they've checked eBay and looked at the cost of it. But I was mentioning that Gentleman Barrett, I did buy his copy of that Temple of Elemental Evil, so I have that upstairs. So it was kind of nice to get it back again, and he gave me a great deal. He was super generous, and was really nice and gave me a good deal on it. That was kind of cool to get a copy back. I've thought of it for a while, but they're pretty expensive online, and I just didn't. I'm probably never going to pay it. I don't need it. I just kind of felt I had it, and I played it for years, and it was kind of it was missing. Do you know what I mean? You have that funny phantom limb feeling. Mm. So it was really nice to get it back. But yeah, I think that's, you know, that's the thing about them is, to me, is just to see where they fit in. You know, Mike had talked about kind of the different tropes, and I think they're, when you look at a lot of the modules, I think a lot of them in many ways do fall into those things. It's like, you know, here's an issue, go and save the town. Here's a, you know, someone who's been kidnapped, go and save them. You know, a king needs you to pick something up, they will give you this. Or, you know, can you help a caravan get somewhere? Like, there's a lot of those kind of things. And that's why I think a lot of modules fall into those kind of situations.
I was going to say with mine. So, of course, in good Jim and Sean fashion here, we didn't discuss this at all. So I had a totally different idea what Mike was talking about for this episode.
Oh, I'm totally off. You're probably way more on than I am. I'm way off. I think I'm so far off target. It's hilarious. You'll probably be way more closer than I will. I'm just rambling at this point.
And that's our podcast.
You know,
that's,
there you go.
It's on rambling. That's all. I was thinking like one, like caverns, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're perfect for one shots. For convenience of time, all the players meet there. It does seem a bit cliche for a full campaign, though.
Yeah.
But tavern's like I think the most famous trope.
Oh, for sure, right? Yeah, I mean, so many, you know, campaigns start is that you meet in a tavern. It's almost a joke now. I think the biggest thing that we always say too is that every table is different, and you do what works for your table and what works for your players. And, you know, I think I also heard some people say, like, you know, like almost like a badge of honor. I was like, no, I write out my own stuff. I never play a module. And I don't think it is a badge of honor. I mean, great. So you wrote your own stuff. That's fantastic. But it's not a bad thing to use a module at all. And modules are really good. Like there's people that were professionals in the field of role playing that put these things together. Like they know what they're doing. The only way that I have been able to, you know, homebrew and world build is because I read modules, I played modules as a player, and I DM'd modules, and I learned what they did, and it's like, oh, that makes sense. And, you know, you kind of learn from that. So don't, you know, turn your nose up to them at all. Like, they're very, very helpful.
Yeah. No, agreed.
Yeah. I think a lot of what Mike was kind of referring to, it was really good. I think part of the problem is that I'm just not as well versed in modules to really comment fully on it. But I think that if you're going to use them, the trick is just finding one that works. Do you know what I mean? Or the ability to maybe manipulate a little bit that works for your players. Yeah. And it also depends how serious you are. Like, I'm way too serious. I get really, I think of my games as a novel. And so I'm very, very serious about what happened in game 3. And now we're in game 35. And what happened in game 3 is very important to what's going on in game 35. Like, I think of it all as canon. And what was said is important. And it goes down in lore. And so I get, you know, very concerned about things. And I probably way overthink it. So with the module, I know I tend to get a little concerned because I'm bringing something in from the outside that is coming into that world, into that canon. And I have to make sure it fits into it. But that's just me being, you know, silly and overprotective of the game. I think it would be way better for me to be a little bit looser. But it's all good.
I know, man, because, like, I'm all about immersion when it comes to D&D. And, like, you're like, I play in your campaign, and I love the immersion. I love that we have a calendar that I can look at. Like, for you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I like being in that world. I like knowing that someone from another game or something's not just going to pop in there. Oh, look, here's so-and-so. Or,
yeah.
You know, it's really immersive. So.
Oh, thanks, buddy. I like that. I really do. And I think it's important, those story beats, because I love when, you know, the players wind up and hear something like, oh, what? And they start talking about, oh, I remember. Do you remember this? Da, 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 da. And someone remembers something from like 5-6 games ago and how it relates to now. And then this whole big discussion comes up about what that means. And, you know, and as a DM, you want to throw in those little tiny hooks and, you know, pieces of information that do mean something. And that if you put it all together, maybe you do solve something. And those things are fun to do. And as a DM, of course, there's payoff when people figure that stuff out and put it together. And then you're like, oh, that's really cool. So yeah. For me, yeah, an immersive world like that is really fun. So I tend not to willy-nilly throw things in because I want to make sure it fits. But modules can completely do that. You can certainly read through some stuff. And like I said, that's the great thing. If you look online, you can even, just get a synopsis of what it's about before you buy one too. So you can go and make sure it does fit into kind of the direction that you want to go.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with also just like you literally can play module to module to module. Like you could go and buy 4 modules and plan that out as for the next, 6 months or more of your campaign and just go from one module to the next. I mean, people do that. That's how we used to play back in the days. Like, there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Or the Dragonlance ones, like they'd be
right.
There's like 15 in a row or something. They all went.
It's a whole story, right? Yeah, totally. Like, yeah, that's phenomenal. And like I said, these people are professional. They knew what they're doing. And most of them.
There are slip ups.
There are, of course. But it's all very playable, and it's amazing how much is out there. And we're just talking kind of like about being very D&D. Like there's so many modules that are outside the D&D world itself that are completely playable in 5e or whatever you're playing. Like there's just tons of stuff. What is it, the RPG, drive-through RPG, or sorry, yeah. I forget the name of the place, right?
DM's Guild, too.
Yeah, there's tons and tons of stuff on there that people have written that you can go and grab for free or next to nothing to go and play. Like, it's amazing. So,
yeah, the Dragonlance, that last book was kind of a flop. Mm. And there was people that wrote, modules to kind of go with that one to make it make more sense and tie some loose ends together, which I thought was pretty cool.
That's neat. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. The Dragonlance stuff, I don't know. I find that kind of hard because it felt like so much was happening and now it feels like it's all been pulled back and it's kind of tough right now. So I don't. It's a bit of a sore wound.
They burned Joe Manganiello. And then
that's so silly.
I think that's where that ended. So
Yeah, it's sad because there was a lot of stuff that felt like it was coming, but there seemed to be just way too much focus on the game thing that they came out with, that was going to be their big thing, and I don't know.
Well, once Hasbro sells D&D, then someone else will buy it, then we'll have hope for Dragonlance again.
There you go. You never know. Maybe, right? Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm interested, just as a side note, something I wouldn't mind doing at our show is putting something somewhere that people can sign up to be notified of things, because anybody who comes, we don't really have any information about them. We will this year for people who signed up for games, we'll have emails and stuff, but I was wondering about maybe just putting a thing where people can opt in to give us their email address and stuff, because I'd like to ask people what they thought about the show and where it's going, because I have had a couple of comments online by a few people, not very many, but a couple of people had mentioned that they felt there was too much, one person said too much 5e games. We technically have 6 games running and only 3 of them are 5e. The other 3 games are Coyote and Crow, which is totally not even of the D&D world. Mike running is OSR, which isn't a D&D world game. And then our good friend TJ, who's running a 3.5, which is D&D, but it's not 5e. But I'd be interested to see, like, I'm feeling, and we've talked about this before, that there is a pull away from Dungeons & Dragons, that, they've not managed themselves super great in the last year and a half, and a lot of people are frustrated, and you're seeing so many game systems popping up right now. But I'd like to get a feel from the people at our show what they feel about that. Like, we're kind of there. Not so much loyalties, but where their direction is. Are they still, D&D 5e focused, or are people pulling away and doing other things? And there's so many things out there, right? And I'd be interested to maybe even run a bit of a poll from people and just get a bit of a temperature gauge where people are at.
That's a good idea.
It'd be kind of neat.
me myself, I am too invested in Dungeons and Dragons, and even though I hate Hasbro, I'm D&D for life, man.
Yeah, I find it hard. It's like, you know, it's like what people call, you know, tissue paper Kleenex, right? Yeah. Even though Kleenex is the brand name, and it's, but you call the product that, the item. It's kind of that way for me for D&D. It's like what we do is D&D. It's not so much the company, it's what we do kind of thing. Yeah. I did play that, the Coyote and Crow, the person who's running the game at our show, asked if we, a couple of us wanted to do kind of a demo of it, give them a bit more practice. And so we got to play that a few weeks ago. And it's a die 12 system. All you do is roll die 12s. And then it works on, you have to have a 8 or higher on your 12-sided die for it to be a success. And then you count the amount of successes, and that determines if the whole thing's a go or not. And so one attack, because I had some bonuses and stuff, I wound up rolling 16 die 12s.
Oh, my God.
It was awesome. Shaka, 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 bam, you know, like it was really fun. And then counting all these dice, a very different way of doing things. And it was kind of interesting to do that, to try a different system. I like the system that we use because I'm just so familiar with it. And it's, you know, it's very, I've just done it for so many years. It's just ingrained and really good. But some of the other systems, I've been looking at Daggerheart a bit, that the Critical Role group have been putting together. I downloaded one of the betas, but now it's already behind, so I'd have to catch up. But I did like some of the ideas that they were doing. You know, Matt Colville's got a new one they are coming out with. I think it's just a wide open area for people right now. And when you're doing that, it must be kind of interesting because you get to pick all the best things and get rid of the things that aren't working and try and put something together. It's kind of interesting. So it'll be neat to see where that goes and see if that opens up for other people. But I love D&D, and I still think it is the game, and it's so amazing. I just, like you, agree that it's so sad that Hasbro has done so much silliness to go and disrupt, you know, the game itself. Like, it's just been an ongoing thing. It feels like every other week they're, you know, do some other bonehead move.
Yeah. I find that D&D's like you were saying, like with the Kleenex tissue paper thing, like mm-hmm. role-playing, fantasy role-playing in my heart is D&D.
Yeah.
So even when I play like other systems,
yeah,
I'll just like, oh, I like the D12 thing. It's like, I'll just rip that off and put that in my D&D games, and I'll still be playing D&D with that new system or like whatever, you know?
Yeah, totally. Right.
So I don't know. That's my thoughts about it anyways.
Yeah. I think that's really, really cool. I read something the other day, that somebody posted, which I thought was a really cool thing. And I'm trying to remember exactly how they stated it. They said it was interesting when you get to doing, your, death saves, that each time you do one, the person needs to tell a little story.
Mm.
And the idea is that, you know, it's their life flashing before their eyes. Have you heard people talk about that before?
Yeah.
I thought that was, I hadn't read that before. I thought that was a really cool way of doing it. And I think they also did it that, I think the idea was that if it was a good story or something, then you had a bit of a modifier or something for when you rolled your death save or something, like that kind of idea, you know, at the DM or the group's discretion or something. But I kind of like that idea, though, that, you know, as you're lying there kind of dying, you are kind of seeing your life flash before your eyes type of idea, and you kind of recant some of that to the group. But it was kind of a cool story thing that you could do that could really add some depth to the story, which is fun.
I love that. Have that, and then put the, because some people do where every time you have to do, like, you get picked up from a death save, that the modifier is like higher for you to get it.
Oh, yeah.
So before it's like a 10 or more. And
then, oh,
like,
that's cool.
You go down and again, then maybe it's a 12 or more. And then,
yeah, that's cool.
More. So then,
yeah, that makes sense.
Stops people from being knuckleheads and just running into battle too. And then makes it a little bit more serious. And I mean, if someone's on death's doorstep, you know, three times, it makes sense that they're going to be easier idea. To kill after that.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. Yeah, I like that idea too. Because I mean, that was the thing for me when we, you know, we played like D&D, AD&D for years, and then, you know, we jumped over to MERP for a really long time, and then I kind of came back in at 3.5. We played that for years and years and years, and then we went straight from 3.5 to 5, like kind of jumped right over the four and all that kind of stuff. And I was kind of hesitant going to 5 at the time. But after seeing, you know, a lot of Critical Role using it, and really more than anything, the thing that got me was advantage, disadvantage. I thought that was just a great mechanism, a lot less numbers for people to have to remember and add up for modifiers, but just it's advantage or disadvantage. And that was kind of the main thing that sold me. But I do remember looking at it going like, It's way easier to get your hit points back now, because you can have a short rest and get your hit points back. Death saves, it's harder to die now than it used to be. And I remember thinking, like, the system leans towards characters surviving longer. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I was kind of really surprised how it felt that the scales had tipped a bit more into the player's, you know, side than kind of like a, you know, of living than of dying type of thing. Like I said, it's not a bad thing, but it is interesting. That's why I kind of like you, what you're saying, like maybe each time you, if you get to death saves each time, it goes up like 10 to maybe 11, like 12, 13, and just keeps ramping up each time it happens. Yeah. Which makes sense.
Hey, we got, five just needs to be a little harder.
A little tougher. Yeah, I think I'm trying to remember back, but I think the old days, it was like that with, if it was resurrection. If you were resurrected once, fine. But if you're resurrected the second time, it was a lot harder. And I think each time it became progressively harder and harder because it's so much of a toll on the body. I kind of remember that. So it'd be kind of along the same lines of that. Like, it's a toll on the body to do it.
Yeah. And in D&D, you're usually praying to a god and you'd be like, you again, like seen you last week.
It's not a revolving door.
Yeah.
It's funny. I'm closed on Mondays. Yeah, I like that idea. Oh, look out if any of our players are listening. That might be something coming your way soon. I love that idea.
Perfect.
Sick. Too awesome. Funny.
I'll just wrap off this quick list. I got a list of tropes.
Cool, go for it. Yep.
So we got, I don't know if this is what Mike meant. Maybe not. Mike, I'm sorry if we didn't hit anything that
I'm sure we missed it to totally.
Hopefully you still enjoy it. So I did dungeons as a trope. Great for railroading for a one shot, because you can literally just put walls up behind them and they have to go the one way. And then in a campaign, it's a good way to like build up a theme or a vibe for like a certain villain.
Mm.
Right? I kind of thought so.
Yeah.
Dragons, of course. Fun for a one shot, but hard to pull off unless the characters are like pretty high level.
Yeah.
But such an iconic villain for like a full campaign.
Yeah, big time.
So I thought that was pretty sweet.
I know our last campaign, which was epic, like we played like 70 some odd games or something. I don't think I had them fight a dragon. I think there was a one time maybe like an undead skeletal dragon, but not a full on real dragon. It's kind of a sacred thing in a funny way. And I just never felt there was a right moment for it. You know, so it's interesting because it's, you know, and I've got some players from that first campaign when they joined me as a DM that was they'd never played before. And so it was, for me, it was kind of fun watching them. I tried to throw in certain things all along the way that were very kind of like milestone-y in your, you know, your adventuring career, things that you've got to do and are involved in. And like the first time you fight a beholder and those kind of things, which is really cool. So I've tried to have a checklist of fun things that you could talk about, but fighting a dragon, I don't think that's happened. I have to do that one of these days.
Well,
it's epic.
Undead dragons are dragons too, Sean.
Yeah, that's probably true. We'll let them be dragons. Okay. What else you got?
I got high magic. Great for one shots to give characters like fun spells and items to play with. But in a longer campaign, if you go too high magic too early, your players might become too powerful and break your game.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought. Bag of holding. It's handy for one shot, so players don't have to track items as much and whatnot. And in longer campaigns, it's such a powerful item. It feels good to like work towards, like to reward them with it eventually. Don't hurt them like right off the bat.
A bag of holding is an interesting thing because it can, even for a DM, it can solve a lot of problems. If you give it to the party, then they don't have to worry about, like, they're just what they're carrying, encumbrance goes out the window, like all that kind of stuff. So I know sometimes it's just easier to give that to them, but it's kind of a thing that should be held off in reality.
And then I've had players, like small players, like dip into the bag of holding, and then, you know, they just their mouth and nose is sticking out of it so they can still breathe, and they're holding on to the outside, and like, oh, just the dumbest stuff. I've seen a player put two bags of holding together, trying to like create like a time rip in reality kind of thing. Like, because there is a thing, it's a, what is it? If a handy haversack and a bag of holding get put together, it like breaks the universe.
It's just something like that. Yeah. Hole. Yeah.
He thought that that's what he was going to do, is in a one shot, and he did it. And I was like, no, dude. I was like, I'm not doing that with two bags of holding. I was like, nothing happens.
They suck into each other and they both disappear.
yeah, that's what I should have done.
So sorry, Charlie.
Yeah. What we got here? Undead, such a classic D&D villain.
Yeah.
Perfect for both one shots and campaigns, since there's such a wide variety of like range on them.
Yeah.
Because you can throw like a horde of zombies at a low level party in a dungeon, or like have a lich be the big bad in a campaign.
Yeah.
So I find Undead's like a pretty good one.
Well, and I think a really fun thing to do too, and you guys experienced this just a couple of games ago, there were a bunch of whites that were thrown at you. And I like altering things a little bit when you can, because I have a number of players in my campaign that are very astute, you know, D&D practitioners, players, and DMs, and have kind of seen and done everything. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I got like one into the other. So we got players that never played before that started out with me, and then I got players that have played a ton. So, and as a player myself, when somebody says, you know, oh, this is what's coming at you, and as a player and DM for over 40 years, you're kind of like, okay, and you have to kind of stop yourself to think about what that is, like, because you know all about it, and you just kind of try and go into it without kind of that knowledge. And so for some of my players, what I like to do is I like to help them out with that. So the whites that you guys fought, there is an ability that whites have that they can actually steal your essence, right? And so on a certain attack, you can roll, and I think it was like D6 plus 2 or something of hit points that are sucked right out of you. And the idea in the game is that after one full rest, you regain those hit points back. But before then, it doesn't matter how much healing you take, those hit points can't be restored. Well, I just kind of messed with that a little bit. So I said, instead of it being one long rest, it was three. And you know, I can see you're grinning. Like, there were some people in our game that had that happen to them, and they're like, when am I going to get my hit points back? And it's just like, yeah. And one even wound up talking to a priest, asking if there was anything they could do. And it's like, and I had the priest break the news to them that no, like, it's, you have to wait. Like, you know, even a restoration, greater restoration won't fix it. You have to, you know, it's a time thing. And so that was really fun. And I think, don't be afraid to do those things. Like, break some of these things that are there, because it catches people off guard who are used to what it's supposed to do. And then that, I find that even if it's a negative thing, it just makes it interesting for everybody, and it catches them off guard. And they're like, oh, okay, we're playing a different game here. And that's fun. Right?
Yeah. I'm just grinning. I'm picturing me and Sean in red baseball caps that say, make D&D hard again.
So we need those baseball caps and t-shirts that say every table is different.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
You got some more on the list?
Awesome. Got one more. Yeah.
One more.
And low intelligent barbarian. Such a great choice for someone new to D&D for a one shot. Easy role playing, easy game mechanics to play.
Yeah.
In a longer campaign, though, it might be a little boring to play like a one trick pony.
Yeah.
But like that being said, I played a big dumb barbarian Goliath in our Out of the Abyss campaign, and I played him for over 5 years, and he's still one of my favorite characters. Like,
yep.
I don't know. So really, it's, you know.
No, you can do. I did too. Mine was Bucky. And he was a barbarian, and his huge, he was an elf, but he was massive, way over, you know, muscled elf. And he was like, you know, dumb as two sticks. Like, and, you know, it was a lot of fun to play him. And that can be hard at times, because it'd be like, you know, you kind of go beyond that being dumb sometimes, because like, everyone's like, well, what should we do? And Sean knows, I think we should do this, but Bucky's too dumb to figure that out. I would just have it be like, he'd come up with a silly solution that would be the right, you know, everyone's like, oh, that's a good idea. But he could say it in a kind of silly, dumb way.
Yeah.
But you don't have to get stuck in those things. You can play with it. I love, we've talked about this before. I love giving characters things like motivations or stuff. So I had Bucky was an orphan, He had been, his parents were killed, and he was shipped off. I wrote in the backstory that his evil uncle shipped him off to an orphanage, and had we continued longer with Bucky's world, that might have been the DM to put in what I had indicated, was that his uncle actually had his parents killed, got rid of Bucky, and then took over everything, right? That was kind of the idea, which is a trope, and that's, you know, it's kind of like Richard III of England kind of thing, right? Anyways, I had Bucky then always looking out for the underdog, and he had this affinity for children. So, you know, one time the DM said, like, you know, we were doing something really important, but off the side, you know, and just for flourish, you put in that these kids, there was something going on, and this kid was getting, you know, something negative was happening over there. So it's like Bucky's like, F this, and just left the party and ran over to help these kids, right? Because that was a moral compass code for him. That was a prime directive to help kids, because no one helped him, and that was something that he did. And the party's like, where are you going? We're gonna fight this crazy. He's like, nope, I'm doing this. And you know, and I love having those kind of things, because it gives you direction for your character. And in life, we have that. We have things that we enjoy, things that we like, things that we are driven towards, things that we want to be involved with. And when that happens, we will do those things. So add those to your characters, have those for them too, and then that way it's not even a question, right? If that's happening, you're gonna do it, because that's what your character is about.
Yeah, and there's always exceptions to rules, right? Like, you could have a lawful paladin that's Mr. 32 Shoes. Maybe he loves gambling, though. Maybe
right?
And not say no to gambling.
You just can't hold back.
Yeah.
Because that is like, no, that's a human thing. That's a human trait, right? To have that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's neat. And you know, the paladin's a great example, because paladin being lawful good, people like it. Like, some people say, why would I want to play that? Because as soon as there's any screaming girl, the paladin's going to run off. Yeah, that's what makes that cool, because then that is something that the DM can mess with, right? Put the party in a bad situation and then have something over here that he knows the paladin's going to have to run over and do. He's going to divide the party, or you know what I mean? But that's cool. It's a moral compass. It's something that you're going to, it doesn't have to be moral. It can be amoral. It can be something that negative that you can't not do. Like you said, like gambling. Soon as there's anywhere near anything that's gambling, that player character is gone, because they got to be, you know, that's cool. It's neat to do that. And it'll piss the party off, but that's fun too.
Was it? It's their lawful good, not lawful stupid.
Yeah. That's
so
right.
You can be an asshole too. Like, yeah, you know, you don't have to be goody two shoes.
That's right.
Just got some that people, compass.
Yeah. And some people have, like I've had like heated debates in my game, where I've had like the players have a disagreement over something, and it's like, you know, four of them are this side and three of them are the other, and they go at it for an hour in character debating about it, and not so much arguing, but close to arguing and explaining why they shouldn't be doing it. And that's cool. Like, some people think that shouldn't happen, but no, that's life. How many times have you been in a situation where there's something you need to get done, and a few people want to do it one way, and the others want to do it different, and you all have to come and decide and eventually come to a resolution on how to get the damn thing done. That's real. And I love when that happens in a game, because it adds this, you know, a bit of tension and people trying to figure it out. It leads usually to compromise. It's amazing.
Yeah. This 13-sided die podcast, you know,
that's right. All we do is argue. It's all about us arguing, because we want to do everything differently. That's what it is.
Yeah. Me and Sean argued for 3 months, and then, but we finally decided on terms today. And
that's right. That's why we haven't been here. Jim and I hate each other, and we couldn't come to terms with what we were going to talk about. So we just argued for 3 months.
When Chris writes the book about our podcast and makes a bunch of money off it, he'll put all those secrets in there. You guys will learn about all the behind the scenes.
Oh, that's so funny. That's awesome. I don't think anyone could argue with you, Jim.
Oh, yeah. John, I'm married.
Oh, okay, then. That's different. That's understandable.
No, my wife's awesome.
Uh-oh, Sarah's going to hear that.
Yeah.
You're in trouble.
All of these. Yeah.
You're in trouble, buddy.
Yeah. No, we are in trouble. She was giving me shit a couple days ago for no podcast being out.
I know.
She's like, the last one came out 3 months ago. I was like, I know.
I feel really bad about it. It wasn't until the other day when I'm like, I actually looked at the date. I'm like, oh my God, I know it had been a while, but I had no idea it was like, had been 3 months. Like, it's, It has been a blur. Like I said, life has just been way too many things going on, and this just kept getting put to the back seat. And yeah, I mean, and full disclosure to everybody, like I text Jim this morning and said, hey buddy, do you have any time in the next couple of days so we can wedge this in before the show? And Jim said, yeah, like I have today and then I'm solid with work. And I'm like, okay, let's just do it today. So we just kind of like threw ourselves together and did this. And I'm so glad we did, because, you know, you just have to make time for things. But hey, Mrs. Epic, I'm terribly sorry. And I apologize for a 3-month break.
Yeah, she said she's going to write more hate mail.
That's awesome. We just got to blame Chris. It's really Chris's fault.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, like yeah.
That's plain and simple. Chris is just wasn't on the ball, and it's his fault that we took so long.
Chris's fault. And we promise once fall hits, every 2 weeks on there the dot, every Monday, we'll release one for sure. Scouts on.
Really? Really?
No.
I mean, and I feel so bad about it because, I mean, it's me. I'm the problem, because this is the fun part. And we can, you know, this takes like maybe an hour, but it's just like once we've recorded it, it's the post work that takes so long. Like, you know, and anybody out there who does podcasts will kind of be like cringing right now because they get it. It's like, this is the fun part, and this is the part that doesn't take that long, really. It's afterwards, it's editing it. Not like, and when I say editing, it's like not cutting things out, but it's just like sound leveling and getting it to sound decent, because Jim and I aren't even in the same room. Like, we're doing this over Discord, so we're in different things and the microphones are different. And so just trying to get it to sound decent. And this one's a little easier because this is our one shot. We're going straight through. There's no little bumpers to put in and things in and around or that kind of stuff, because that takes time. But yeah, sometimes it's anywhere from like, you know, 4-6 hours. Then you start thinking like putting graphics to this thing and all that kind of stuff, getting it uploaded, doing it. It's like a day's work once you've recorded it. And that's the part that I find hard. It's like, I have probably 30 YouTube videos of raw footage that I have recorded over the last couple of years that I've not turned into YouTube videos, but I've got like 30 different projects that are all the raw footage is there. I've recorded it all. I just haven't had the time to turn that raw footage into a video to put up on YouTube, because the filming is, although it takes a little time to set things up when you're working and film, it takes so much more time to edit it all together and turn it into a video. And it's kind of the same with the podcast. It's the post production work that just takes so damn long.
Yeah.
So that's my fault.
It is Sean's fault.
It is my fault.
Because he's the hardest worker I know. That guy, I can't even tell you people how many projects and little side things and side quests and the work that guy does all the time. I'm more about fun and hobbies on my downtime. I just work a normal job. And then when I'm not working, it's fun time. But Sean is a hard worker. So
thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. It's a lot of it is fun, and I don't want to come across it any way that I'm complaining, because I love what I get to do. But time's very valuable. And
You're killing it, man. Thanks, buddy. Love it.
Like we said earlier, and I think we talked about this on the podcast before, I had a project that I sent out to a client around Christmas time, and the post office lost it. And so I had to rebuild that project for the client. And that has, in all honesty, kind of put me in a tailspin since, because it was a whole, it was a lot of hours, like 80 to 100 hours of lost work that we had insurance. So I got repaid by the post office, which is lovely, but I still had to redo the project. And that really messed things up and messed up the schedule. So I think since then, I just feel like I've been behind and trying to catch up. But anyways, we're getting ArtCon done, and I'm taking a break, and then we're going to breathe, and then we'll try and get back on track, and we'll have these more often, and it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, and then you and Lore Master Chris are going to come visit me with your wives.
We are. We are.
In the mountains, so that'll be fun.
Very excited about that. That's going to be so fun.
You guys, some of my Dwarven hangouts.
That's cool. I'm looking forward to it. It's so beautiful up that way. The wife and I were out that way. We weren't able to connect with you a couple of years back. We're out that way for just a little quick trip. So I'm really looking forward to going out and spending some time out there. So that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I'll show you some local spots.
Sick. Get to visit the elves and the pixies.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Well, Mike, I hope that we maybe touched on your what you wanted us to talk about. Yeah, your topics.
Yeah, just maybe.
Even just a little bit. Just
got close.
Yeah, got close.
Nudged up alongside of it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Cool. All right, buddy. Well, if there's nothing else, I think maybe we will call it there, and I will try and quick edit this and get it up as soon as I can for everybody. But thank you so much, you guys out there. You're all just amazing. We really appreciate it. We're looking at some of the stats on there, and there's been a ton of people listening to stuff since we posted 3 months ago, which is just unbelievable that you guys are still there and listening when we're not even putting stuff out. So thank you so very much. I do really enjoy doing this. It's nice to sit and chat with you, buddy.
Yeah, man. We have a lot of fun doing this, and I appreciate you, Sean. I appreciate all of our fans. And our next one will definitely be recorded at ArtCon because it's that one day. So,
and that's only, like I said, 10 days away. So I don't want anyone out there bitching. We're like doing one now, or we're doing it in 10 days. That's like a record.
Yeah, and then once fall hits, every 2 weeks on Monday.
There you go. Like every clockwork. Always.
For like sure.
Clockwork. That's awesome.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
All right. Perfect, buddy. Thanks so much for chatting today. And we'll see all of you guys in 10 days at ArtCon.
Woo! See you soon. Woo!
Ciao.
Well done, you. You've made it to the end of the podcast. You are a bold adventure, to be sure.
Remember to fill your wire skin and to have your blade sharpened at the blacksmith's before departing.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast to be notified of new 13-sided die adventures. And don't forget to tell your friends about the silly fools talking about D&D.
13-sided die has been brought to you by Sean and Jim.
Executive produced by Sean and Jim.
Mini painting by Sean and Jim.
Engineered by Sean and Jim.
Goblin torture device by Sean and Jim.
Conceptualized by Sean and Jim. Please note, no goblins were harmed in the making of this podcast.